relatively new, and we don't have a ton of confidence in the forecast, so we just have to wait to see how that one develops. We're expecting to have some pink salmon harvest in June. It seems like that's been picking up over the last few years. There's a few years back where there was just a ton of pink salmon, so we don't include that in our forecast, but we're expecting about a million pinks in June. The other forecast that we have that's of interest for you guys is the Chinook sockeye forecast. Their early run harvest is forecast to be 239,000, and their late run is forecasted for 323,000. But as everybody knows, Chinook has been really, really low the last few years, and so we're waiting to see how the run is going to develop. They have just over 1,000 fish past the weir right now, which is not looking very strong. But it can change pretty quick, so we'll just wait and see how that goes. And then relating to Chinook and the early run, I'm pretty sure you're all aware that at the Board of Fisheries meeting this spring, the Chinook early run was designated a stock of concern by the board. And then there was a meeting at the meeting to get the stakeholders together from the Ariane Saners and the Chinook fishermen to have an agreement, sort of a guideline for what to do if the Chinook early run doesn't come in and meet the early run goals. I have copies of that. It's RC-104 from the meeting. You guys probably all are pretty familiar with it. But if Chinook is not going to meet the early run escapement goal, there could be restrictions on June 15th for the Saners in the Shumigan Island section, restricted to 40 hours, but only for the same year. And then the same could happen on the 20th and the 25th for the main openers. We're just going to keep monitoring the Chinook run and see how that develops. But those restrictions are possible, as the same fleet, I'm sure, is aware. There are provisions for the July fishery for the early run, but the transition for the early run is, you know, around the 8th of July, so usually they start looking more at the late run and monitoring the late run. But the language in the RC is a little bit more vague for what our actions could be in July, but we'll continue to keep monitoring the early run even in July.
Lisa, can you repeat the questions that come in there?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, can you hear me okay? Sorry, I never checked that.
Can hear you really well. Yeah, you're coming in fine. I just couldn't hear the question. It sounded like maybe it was Kylie asking the question, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that was Kylie was just checking to see if the restrictions in the Shumigans for the Fane fleet would continue on into July if the early run at Chinook was not being met.
Thank you.
Yep. I guess, do you want to take any more questions for the Chinook part of it? I was just going to kind of roll into test fisheries and stuff, but... No questions yet, just Kylie. Okay, so we've got some test fisheries going on. There's currently a test fishery going on to determine if there are chum present down in South Unimak and on the east side of Popoff. This is kind of a Saner-initiated test fishery, and they're going to use it as a metric to coordinate the Sane fleet if there are too many chum present to try to reduce the harvest of chum this season. There's not going to be any department regulatory changes based off of this test fishery, and we're just going to continue to monitor the chum harvest and continue to work with the fleet to see how the chum harvest progresses this season. The other two test fisheries we have going on this year are the standard immature test fishery. I haven't put that news release out yet, but that'll be the same thing at the beginning of the post-June fishery. We'll do the immature test fishery. Going to be looking for bids for seniors to go out and do that. And then we'll also be doing our post-June test fishery that is used to generate revenue for the department. that's pretty much all I have for my sort of standard preseason meeting stuff. And at this point, I was going to turn it over to Birch Foster to talk about the chum salmon sampling project, unless anybody has any questions about what I've talked about so far. There'll be plenty of time for discussion and questions at any point. Okay, I've got a question here. Hang on 1 second. I would try to summarize your question, but it might just be easier if you take the phone and talk towards the phone. Do you feel comfortable doing that?
It's upside down. I don't have to stand on my head, right?
You're good.
Okay. This is David Osterbank from Sandpoint. And I just have a question and a concern about what the future holds for additional scientific projects that can help determine how to make the chickmick fishery better. I mean, we have a situation here in the Shumigans where they completely close an area down until the chickmick fishermen get the next number of fish. And in most years, it's shut down completely, and there's no seine effort, there's no gill net effort, yet we see no improvement in what's going on in the lake systems of Chickmick. We're as concerned as they are in terms of those folks getting the kind of escapement and the ability to go out and commercial fish. But we're also very concerned about the fact that we're shut down all the time, and we don't have that opportunity in June or July, except at the end of July, to go down there and participate in a commercial fishery. And we haven't seen very much activity in terms of more science. And so my question is what kind of science does it take in order to answer some of the questions that we have as commercial fishermen?
All right, well,
Lisa, this
I think
is Kevin.
We will have Kevin. That's what I was going to say. Kevin Schaberg would be a good person to answer that one.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Schaberg with Fish and Game Research out of Kodiak. So as far as the Chickmick research regarding that, the four recent returns, we have taken a different approach with the escapement goal concept, looking at overall production in Chickmick, and we're going to implement a new escapement goal that's a single escapement goal instead of an early and late. The hopes there is that we'll be able to maximize the total return for the whole watershed and not try to be competing with maximizing each individual run. So that's something we've done with existing information and existing research that we have data on. There's also the disaster fund programs that are currently in review. The department has submitted a couple of projects. There are other University of Washington, some other folks, University of Alaska Fairbanks, I'm aware of that have submitted programs as well. There's a few million dollars of research that's going to be put into the Chickmick watershed here, probably starting next year. The department is going to be focused on freshwater environmental conditions, densities of fish, health of fish, and migratory patterns of juveniles in the Chickmick watershed. So we will be doing a significant amount of research into the Chickmick watershed here, probably starting next year, in addition to the stuff that we have ongoing there. So hopefully that answers your questions. If you have any more, just let me know.
Lisa, this is Nick in Kodiak. I wonder if Bill would want to touch on briefly the early marine work that Katie is working on developing?
Certainly. This is Bill. Yes, the department made a request, and the legislature has hopefully provided us funding. Sam will have to talk about that. Yeah, subject to the governor's signature. For us to begin a salmon ocean ecology program, for years we've known that it's the major problem is not habitat in freshwater, but it's happening out in the ocean. When there are changes in the ocean, there's changes in production. And for years we've had to rely on NOAA surveys that weren't designed to look at juvenile salmon, especially ones that are down here in this area. The ones that we've used have been in Southeast Alaska and in the Northern Bering Sea. So we now have a program that is just starting up that will be looking at juvenile salmon after they leave the systems and move into the ocean, and look at the experience that they're having in the ocean. We know from elsewhere, the Northern Bering Sea and in Southeast Alaska, that we can get a good sense of what the production will be or how well these fish are surviving. The reason we're looking at juvenile salmon is because it's the first year in the ocean, that before that first winter, that is kind of setting the production for, you know, the returns of salmon to the systems. So we'll be starting a program to take a look at that and see if we can do what we've done elsewhere in the state, down here in the west side of the Gulf of Alaska and in Southern Bering Sea. So there's another large program that's getting started. And I could talk for hours on that. I won't, for your sake.
Any other questions? Did that come through?
Yeah.
Well, my question was for, I guess, Westward region. If you go to a single system escapement goal for Chignik, how will that affect the stock of concern designation and management for the Area M fishery moving forward?
Question.
I guess that was a Kevin question.
Yeah, so this is Kevin Shaver again. That's a good question. I can imagine that we will continue the stock of concern designation on the early run. We may put some calendar dates around that. We haven't really discussed it in too much detail as the escapement goal hasn't been reviewed at the board cycle. So I imagine there'll be some conversation during the board meeting this year on how we address that stock concern relative to a single run escapement goal. But the intent is not to wipe that stock of concern. It is to acknowledge that, and then we're trying to figure out ways to incorporate that within the single run goal. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, I think we're kind of done with questions on the first part of the meeting, unless there's anybody online who has a question they want to throw out there. Okay, I'm not hearing anybody, so I guess if, Birch, you want to go through the sampling plan for the Chum Salmon Genetics Project that's going to go on this summer. I don't actually have copies of the op plan here in the building here, but I can print more out and have them ready at the office for people. But, Birch, can you go over the design for the Chum project?
Yep. Thanks, Lisa. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, coming in.
Okay. All right, so I know everyone is aware of a new sampling project we're initiating this summer. And as everyone knows, the primary goal is to is to estimate the stock composition of the chum salmon harvest in the South Peninsula area. The long-term plan is to do this over a period of 5 years. You know, this is the first year. We're just getting started, but we published an op plan. And first thing I want to point out is that I feel like it originally started as the June idea, and then I think there was a lot of interest in post-June too. So we're kind of looking at the whole season. You know, everyone's aware of the background of this sort of sampling project in the South Peninsula. Concerns about chum runs in Western Alaska in recent years have heightened the debate, I guess. So I'm just going to give you a brief overview of how we're going to sample this season. Not go too much into the background, but I'll lay it out here, and if people have questions, they can ask. So as far as the overall sampling, there are a total of 25 strata that we're going to sample and analyze in June and July, and 6 in August, so that everyone knows most of it is looking at June and July fishery. And starting in June, and this goes for the whole season, we have two general areas, and that is the UNIMAC and Southwestern District. That's one area, and then Southeastern and South Central District. So we have those are the two areas that we're looking at. And in June, we will be looking at four strata in the UNIMAC Southwestern area and four in Southeastern South Central for seine. And for gillnet, we'll be sampling drift gillnet in UNIMAC and Southwestern, and there'll be four strata there too. And we'll also be sampling setnet fish in Southeastern and South Central over June, but only one stratum. So that's the general June idea. As we move into July, are we still on? You guys got me?
Yeah, we still got you. I think somebody else just joined, but we got you.
Okay, sounds good. So that's a total of 13 strata we're going to sample and analyze in June. As we move into July, we have 12, and that's going to be looking at, in those two different areas, we're looking at three seine and three gillnet. And once again, we're looking at drift gillnet out in UNIMAC and Southwestern and set gillnet in Southeastern and South Central. And then as we move into August, there's only six, as I said, only six strata we're going to look at. And in those areas, too, we got two for seine for both areas and one for gillnet. And that's, you know, that is a brief overview of the, you know, month-by-month areas and different gear type separations, what we're going to be sampling and breaking apart. And a lot of the gear type separations, that is something different than WASP. We thought that would help with identifying different, you know, stock composition trends between gear types and also between areas. And another major difference in the sampling is that we are not just collecting fin clips. We've added some biological sampling along with it, so we're collecting scales that will help us get ages on the fish, and we are also collecting a length. So we got the size. We're going to be looking at identifying sex. Although early in the season, sometimes it's pretty hard, especially with a lot of immature fish around, to sex the fish without cutting them open.
So we'll primarily be looking at more in July and August when we can, with good accuracy, determine sex. So those are all the pieces of information we're collecting. As far as the genetics information, we're clipping a small piece of the fin, the pelvic fin. So it's not taking much off the fish, really. Anyways, that's the general idea. I guess let me stop there, and if anyone has any questions, we can address those.
Yeah, there's one question here.
My name's Taylor Lundgren. I was just wondering why there was concern of August, since we're under local management at that time. Elaborate a little bit. Thanks.
I wouldn't say there was concern in August. I think that when the idea was just the June fishery, you know, that's one thing. But when you know, we posed the question of post June, it seemed like the very very likely, the best thing to do is to analyze the whole season and look into August and collect information, in some areas that we've never collected data from. You know, and if you don't go out and collect it, I guess you don't know.
Yeah. But if you feel like you need to do all this, we should be able to the north side. I think we should be doing Bristol Bay, too, on Patio. We're getting lots of dogs up there. And it would never, ever done up there. So it should be looked at, too. Thank you.
Do you hear that, Bert? I think...
I'm kind of
to see if he wants to answer it. He's gonna know. Yeah, so go back to you.
Okay. No, I did hear the question and the comment about Bristol Bay, and that's I think that's a good point.
All right. Well done.
I got a question. This is Julian Manos here. I got to the conversation a little bit late here, but you already explained this, but as far as the genetic sampling you're doing, it still doesn't delineate CWAC fish. Is that correct? And if so, is there any way to sort of get that information, or it's just not a reality?
This is Bill Templin, Chief Fishery Scientist with the department. So those two questions are somewhat related here. So first of all, let's start with the coastal Western Alaska CWAC group of stocks. That's what we have there is a biological reality. These populations are very similar genetically, and genetics has been basically our tag, our ability to distinguish stocks from each other. So biologically, they're very similar. We continue to look for genetic markers that distinguish these, but we're also looking into other marks, other distinct things that distinguish these stocks from each other, timing, location, even otolith chemistry. So we're continuing to look for ways to distinguish them, but at this point in time, we really can't tell those stocks apart, which is very unfortunate. That also then relates to what's happening on the north side, on the North Peninsula. Most of the fish that are harvested there are identified as coming from coastal Western Alaska and the CWAC stock. And so we wouldn't be able to distinguish Nushagak-bound chum salmon from Yukon-bound chum salmon. It is a good question. It is a good place that we could be looking. like Birch explained, we started with wanting to focus on an area and then on the June fishery here. And we've expanded it, but it's also all dependent on availability of resources, not just money, but the ability to hire people and put them in the field to sample and other resources, also laboratory time, et cetera. So that's an idea that could be explored in the future. There could be some, we could repeat some sampling up there, but right now we're concentrating on just getting information where we can. So, Dan, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just saying, I don't think there would be a lot of utility to sampling those if we can't tell them apart from the whole stock structure of Bristol Bay, Kuskokwim, Yukon, and Norton Sound. They're all the same genetically at this point. So sampling there wouldn't tell us much, I don't think.
So I guess as a follow-up question then, and I should probably know this, but what exactly, where does the boundaries end for a SEWAC or a coastal western Alaska chum? I've heard numbers, but what is the extent of that range, just out of curiosity?
This is Bill again. That range goes from Norton Sound. It extends up to Yukon for the summer run, so it goes up to the middle of the Yukon. It goes all the way up the Kuskokwim River, except for the fall run stocks, which are so small, we wouldn't notice them anyway. And then around the corner and into all the way as far over as Nishigak and just a little bit past Nishigak and down the east side of Bristol Bay. Those chum populate, well, it actually comes down to, I think if we extend it a little bit, it comes all the way down to that Senevan, and that's about the point where it stops. So it's a fairly large area. If you wanted to get into the science of it, it's probably caused by sea level change and a large amount of straying among systems in that whole area.
And it does not, I guess, it doesn't include our local stocks. We are able to delineate the local Alaska Peninsula stocks.
Yes.
Is that correct? Perfect. Okay. Thank
that
you.
Is correct.
My question would be the rationale for not camping Bristol Bay is because you can't delineate stocks.
Yes.
So what's the rationale for camping substance those stocks? But if we don't know where they're going, then a massive standard fishery is taking place between this area and that area, the area that's most in trouble. I mean, you have them on the beach. That's, I mean, I don't think anybody here will argue that. You know, they're going to migrate along the beach, and you have, thousands and thousands and thousands of gill nets in the water. The question, it begs the question, is Bristol Bay a large user group of Utah-Tuskegee Mountain Chum?
That, again, is a really good question. It's the question that needs to be answered. It's the one, unfortunately, that we can't answer at this point in time.
Yeah.
So what we do have numbers of chum salmon harvested in Bristol Bay. And we also know that almost all of those are from the coastal western Alaska stock group. So we can just assume that catch is coming from that entire group. But we can't tell you how many of those are coming from Yukon or the Kuskokwim.
Yeah.
Here, though, while we can't tell those apart, one thing that's important here is being able to distinguish, say, Asia fish from the entire catch here, right? If we can pull those out of the equation, we're talking about a smaller number of fish here that are potentially close to western Alaska.
And we've supported this work, absolutely. I think there's a big... The size of chums has changed, the body shape, it's changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And I think that we think that there's a lot of Asian. I know the Bering Sea College fishery is finding a massive amount of Asian hatchery fish. But the concern still is, you feel like there's a thing that's being pointed. Hopefully in the future we can spend some more money and break that. I hope we can find some money to break those stocks apart. There's Where there's will, there's a way, I guess.
But it costs a lot of money.
I'm just curious. I mean, jump stocks around the state. I guess my concern is we're looking at one specific area.
I want a question.
Hey, Julian, hang on. Sorry, we've got somebody starting a question.
Yeah. Oh, so sorry about that, but I was speaking when you started. So this is Dalvin Hospedak. So is one part of this equation also that the stock I run in Bristol Bay is so important and so huge that you got hesitancy to look at that? Because, you know, we've been fighting this over this chum thing for 25, 30 years now. We had one of the largest hatcheries in the state built in Cold Bay, and that was to produce chum. We had to put that thing out of commission because they said there was no way to tell. Back then, we were on a 500,000 chum limit. And we asked, if we start producing mass amount of chums in Cold Bay, will you take that into account? They said, no. When you reach 500,000, they're shut down. That went on for years. So that hatchery only produced 1 or 2 years, I think. Anyway, it got shut down and turned over to the borough. But if our red run here was as big as Bristol Bay's red run, would this be a problem? Because to me, it really looks like every time we go down this road, once we get into the bay, it's like we can't separate those stocks. We can't tell the difference. And if we bring up the idea that they could be intercepting at a higher rate than we are, because the board of fish in the past has always said, the closer you get to the natal stream, the higher the intercept rate. Well, we're about as far away as you get from that natal stream. So the intercept rate must get higher as you go into the bay and up the coast. But it's untouchable. So we pay the full price down here, and everybody else skates.
Well, this is Sam Raylan. I can say that we're not hesitant because of the Bristol Bay sockeye run. We just don't have the tool to tease those out. But what we do have is the chum harvest numbers in Bristol Bay. And for the last 20 years, it's averaged around 1.5 million, I think over 2 million a couple of years. But in the last 2 years, it's been in the 200,000 range. So their harvest of chum has dropped drastically, and it's coincident with the other CWAC stocks. It's been consistent with all of them. So we see the same pattern there. That's the only real tool we have. We're also struggling to get chum escapement into the Nooshigak, for example, and we do take management actions to try to make sure we're getting adequate chum escapement into that river and King escapement as well. That restricts the sockeye harvest. So we're aware of it, but if we had the tool to tease those apart, it's certainly something that we would definitely look at. I guarantee we would look at that because it's a question everybody has. And speaking of Russell Creek, my background is in the hatchery program. It was actually shut down because that is the only place we've ever recorded IHNV, it's a virus that sockeye carry, in chum salmon. And we had to basically eradicate it there because we didn't want it to spread to other chum stock. If that had been a successful program, I think 100% marking, we could have used that as a mixed stock tool, such as we do in Prince William Sound, where they're 100% otolith marked, and we just sample every catch and make sure that we're not over-harvesting the wild stocks there. So I think, I mean, that's a tool that could be used, but that ship sailed 25 or 30 years ago now, I guess.
Will harvest me? Two questions. Will harvest rate be in this document, and will any of it information be available for the 23 board cycle? I mean, rushing science is never a good thing. Maybe it will be a good thing, maybe it won't. I guess that's the question on everybody's mind, because whatever comes out of this will probably make or break the board cycle for the AREM fishery, I'm sure.
All right, this is Bill.
This is a really important question again. It's also one that, unfortunately, I can't answer. I can't give you a 100% answer. I can tell you that what we're missing here are the potential harvests that happen after this fishery, that happens on these fish. That would be Bristol Bay, you know, and it might be in-river fisheries. I don't know what will happen in the Yukon and Kuskokwim this year. That would be small. That's not insurmountable. We can get those numbers. The other piece that we'll be missing is the ability to estimate the entire escapement for that whole area. Where we have escapement, we do assess numbers of fish into the Kuskokwim, into the Yukon, and Nushagak, but we'll need to make some assumptions about what that represents in all the unsampled areas. So that's, again, not insurmountable. It was done in WASIP. It was a method was developed in collaboration with stakeholders that were involved in WASIP, as well as with an external scientific team. So, again, so that's not insurmountable. But it's going to take some work, and we're going to have to, I can't promise it will be done, but we definitely are working on it to make sure that if it's at all possible to get a reasonable, trustworthy estimate, we'll go ahead and do the harvest rate. That's an important part of understanding what the data that are going to be collected actually mean. What do they mean for an individual stock? So harvest rates is where we went with WASIP. Originally started as a stock composition study that got moved to on beyond into harvest rates. The other question was about a rapid, I'm going to call it rapid, it's going to take months, turnaround on these samples. That, again, the lab is full. Their schedule is full. Right on up, because they're doing samples from all other fisheries as well. This is very important, though. So we'll have to look at if we decide to go ahead and do this analysis, we'll have to bump some other important samples out of the lab, right? So that's going to be a trade-off that happens in discussion with the commissioner, the director, and stakeholders. So that work can be done. This is not a small amount. There are 11,000 samples that are going to be collected this year under this plan. That's three times what we run for Bristol Bay right now. It's a lot of samples. I mean, if you take an action that just takes 1 minute to do, which is pretty quick action in the lab, and multiply that by 11,000, you're talking about a lot of time. So it's a question of scale there too. We can't just slide it in by having people work an extra weekend or two. It's gonna push some things out. So, and we can't just have it out and have it finish in February. It's got to come out, and we've got to, you know, work it out, do error controls, make sure that we are not making mistakes in either the laboratory analysis or the statistical analysis. We have to think about what it means and put it all in context. It would be inappropriate to just drop some tables into the RCs. So that piece, this was originally intended to not be done this year. You can read that in the operational plan. If we do it this year, it's being done. It wasn't planned for, and so it's going to have to be worked out. So, and this isn't kicking the can down the road or anything else. It's big project, and the only reason we're considering it is because it's important.
If they can come out and do plans, great. If they can't, take time.
Okay. This is Charlotte from Relation Peace Borough. So just really quick to clarify, not necessarily about having results available by the next board cycle, but just for the full length of the project, I thought I kind of remembered that there's going to be kind of annual reports on what's done, but then you guys don't plan on actually producing any, like, interpretation of the results until at least 4 years are done. Is that kind of the plan? Or, and how that work in terms of reporting? Like, will those data be available? Okay, Bert, we're passing it to you. Hey, Bert, are you still there? Did you hear that question?
This is Kevin. I'll answer that question, I think. So if I'm understanding it right, you want to know when data will be reported and then when we'll have analysis completed. And so, like Bill just mentioning, we won't have anything to report on until the genetics have been tested and conducted and cleaned and evaluated. But we would be able to produce an annual report of how many samples we collected, and we could probably produce reports on age and length. Those are data that we'd be able to more quickly look through. However, 1 year, one season snapshot of that doesn't really provide a lot of context. So that's why the study plan does say that we won't provide the more in-depth analysis of what this means in the big picture until we have 3 or 4 or 5 years of data. So we might be able to publish intermittent pieces of the data that we're collecting, but a lot of that's just going to be determined on what Bill was talking about, when we can get the genetic samples through and when data is available that makes sense to distribute to folks.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, that answers my question.
Hey, Boston, back again. I have a different kind of a question.
This is Bert, real quick. I have a clarification.
Okay, go ahead, Bert.
Kevin covered, talking about sampling. I think one of the things is in the operational plan, we do talk about reporting the sampling results after every season, and we intend to do that, like Kevin's saying, we're about where we got the samples, how many samples we got, the age and the size composition of everything we collected. So we do plan on putting that out every year, but as Bill is talking about, the genetic analysis is definitely a different beast, and that will take more time to and years of data collected to get that into a palatable format for everyone so we can put it out there. Anyway, that's all I was going to say.
Okay, this is Dave Osterback. I have two questions. One of them is, are there any other things that go on in some of these big river systems of predation that causes a decline of salmon? I mean, those rivers are big, so they must have other species of fish that are in there and prey on salmon. The other question I have is, how many river systems are in AYK? That's over.
Well, one thing that we were cognizant of, I think is mentioned earlier, is that on the Yukon, at least, all four major species, the summer chum, the fall chum, the Chinook, and the coho, they all failed at the same time. Well, they're not all caught in Area M fisheries, so it's intuitive that something else is going on. We do have a lot of early life history work, Dr. Katie Howard's work, that shows that the especially with Chinook, with summer chum as well. Predominantly, the mortality occurs in those first several months at sea before the first winter. So we've got this window of time now where we know where the majority of mortality normally occurs. But what we don't know is if there's some additional mortality happening farther out there now that we haven't been able to measure yet. Maybe Bill could elaborate on that. I think I just left that open.
Yeah, so this is Bill. Another good question. Things are happening in the rivers. Chum don't spend, they come out of the gravel and they start heading down to the ocean. So they don't spend a year in the river systems like Toho do and Chinook do. And what we've seen recently with the really warm years and the very dry years that we've had, and then in some places we've had extreme breakups that disturb the gravel, et cetera, we've actually seen evidence in chum salmon in the Yukon that could also be the water temperatures. Chum salmon are traveling a long ways up, especially the fall-run chum salmon are traveling all the way up and across the border into Canada. A lot of time spent in freshwater systems, and when the water temperature in the Yukon was high, it was affecting these fish. And, you know, the juveniles, the eggs and the juveniles and the gravels were affected by either warm water temperatures or in the spring, the breakup, the freshets that were caused a lot of mortality, we think. So there are some things happening in the rivers. That's why we're saying it's before the first winter at sea. It could include some freshwater impacts as well. And then in the ocean, we've had, everyone here probably remembers the blob back in 2014, 15, 16, the warm water that was out in the middle of the Gulf of Alaska. And then we've had a couple of shorter ones. We call them marine heat waves now. They kind of come through the system. And the chum and the coho and the shrimp that are out there have experienced several marine heat waves over their time in the ocean, and the sockeye as well. The sockeye and pink seem to be doing better in this region with those, not so much in BC. So anyway, we expect to see continued effects of what's happening from these warm water temperatures and their effects on the ecosystem in the ocean, which is another reason why we, rather than just pointing out there and saying it's somewhere out there, we've started a program, an ocean ecology program, to actually put that together so we can understand it for the management of these species and these stocks. Does that help answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's your way on the cover.
Yes.
None of the budget has been approved yet, unless it happened yesterday or today. I don't have any connectivity here. It's all passed the legislature. It has to be transmitted to the governor for his veto to approve. And that's what we're waiting on. Well, the funding for this project, we haven't received it yet either, but we're doing it anyway. So cross your fingers, it gets signed.
I wanted to know how many river systems were in Yukon.
Oh, that would be...
Well, so AYK is a pretty broad region, and I don't know the number, but the major systems are, the Crystal Bay, Nooshigak, for chum, but there are others that have chum in it. There's the Kuskokwim and all of its tributaries. There's several smaller systems around Kuskokwim Bay also. And then you get into the Yukon and all of its tributaries, and then Norton Sound. And now what we're finding is, especially the pinks, what I didn't mention on the Yukon is the pinks are actually doing better. We're getting more pinks on the Yukon and in some of the other areas. So whatever's affecting in the ocean these other stocks doesn't seem to be bothering the pink, wherever it is from egg to ocean doesn't seem to be hurting the pink with that. But the other thing we're seeing is that pink salmon in particular, but the other stocks, are also migrating and colonizing to the north. We're starting to get them up on the north slope now where they didn't used to exist. So things are changing and they're moving. So I guess over time we're going to add more salmon streams to our catalog as they colonize. But I don't know the number, but it's a mass number. You know?
The whole number's not right off. I mean, like you said, it's a lot of larger systems like the Yukon, a lot of tributaries associated with them, and specifically Upper Chum, you know, they only go up to the Panama and the Yukon primarily, and then you have the operation.
Other species of salmon besides pink wander off and create their own
ecology. There were no salmon here 10,000 years ago. Huh. All under ice.
So we can blame.
Maybe not you.
Me.
They're all accounted. I mean, we have an accounting, and it's generally through fish tickets and processor core report. Chums as red, so they do separate them.
Yeah.
Right. Same fisheries as well. A lot of other species get mixed in. They get sorted out eventually.
Are you ready yet?
Costume coming from tomorrow. Are you ready to? Yeah, Q-Tip was going to Pulse Pass this afternoon.
Yeah, the question was whether we had started sampling the chum salmon, and they took 80 fish 2 days ago and then 40 this morning from the SetNet delivery. So there's a few samples taken already, and then as the fishery starts picking up, they'll get busier and busier.
I'm not sure exactly how I think this process, but sure, I know last.
Are you going to be able to get at these chums to sample them, depending on how Trident goes about the processing?
Yeah.
Birch or Kevin?
Yeah, this is Kevin. I think I can address that one. I think we're planning on having crews distributed around the South Peninsula at the facility. They're in Sandpoint, also in Falls Pass. So we've got crew already out in some and planning on heading out there in other locations here probably Friday or Saturday. So I think we're going to have access to the fish that we need to sample from all of those different strata.
Yeah, there's going to be samplers in Falls Pass and Sandpoint in June, and then in July and August there'll be Falls Pass, King Cove, and Sandpoint.
I guess my question would be, if there are restrictions based on the Chignik Stock of Concern designation in the Shumagan and possibly EO authority used to prevent chum harvest in the South Peninsula fishery, doesn't that mess up the scientific time frame of this whole process? And we are somewhat comparing it to WASOP, correct? So if you aren't fishing on those days, you kind of lose your...
This is Bill. Two quick questions, and then I have two answers to that question. One, if you're not fishing, the intent here is to look at the harvest, stock composition for harvest, not of the fish swimming through the water. It would be a different design. So we're actually just looking at what's harvested And if there's no harvest, and this happened during the Wasip years, there were periods of time when there was no harvest, and so it just there was no harvest. That goes in with zero, right? So,
pretty important, I think, the stakeholders on both sides of the issue, figuring out if there are AOI cases present in the Unimas fishery or the South Peninsula fishery, when are they going by? Are they going by early when we're sitting on the beach? Are they going by when we're out there? You know, and just kind of hanging out and no harvest. I spoke with department very early when this first came up, and the state offered to sample every day, month of June. If we're looking for those fish, let's find them where they are, when they are. And my concern is with all these other kind of stocking concern and politics and everything, that we end up getting a smaller snapshot with who knows what it shows. That's a concern.
I think I want to address that a little bit. We are being a little reactionary, right? It's pretty much unprecedented what happened in especially the Yukon last year. Zero subsistence harvest.
Yeah.
And it's known through WASIP that some of those fish are harvested here. So that's really unpalatable, depending on subsistence, that knowing or assuming that some of their fish were harvested somewhere else, but they weren't able to harvest anything. So this is a little reactionary. The need for reaction is to let's just shut down all of Area M. You've heard it, right? That's the knee-jerk reaction. And our response to that is, well, will that have an effect on AYK's thumb stuff? Will that have any effect at all? So why would you take an action if you don't know if it's going to achieve what you're trying to achieve? That's that draconian or that punitive to another user group. So our intention now is to take another look at the harvest and see if we can tease out just how many of those AYK chum are harvested in the harvest here. And if it turns out that there's some large proportion, then maybe more restrictive action here is warranted until they start recovering. But if it turns out that they are at low proportion, or so that action we would take here wouldn't have an effect, then there's not a need to take those actions. So that's kind of two parts of this issue. Speaking of taking action, we've got kind of long-term average chum harvest in this area in June especially that everybody's aware of. Last year, doubled that or more than doubled that. And so I know the fact that our commissioner has committed to keeping a really close eye on that chum number this year, and if it starts to look like we're going to get anywhere near above a normal or high end, he's promised to take action. You need to be aware of that. And by action, I mean time and area restriction. It's that serious for AYK.
I've got two quick questions for that. One, if he does take action or does action taken that reduces our fishing time, are we going to be sampling on our normal scheduled fishing days that we don't need to actively fish? Why not? And two, is the most probable response of an increase in chum harvest in Area M corresponding to low catch in the Yukon when the Yukon is showing low numbers, or is it more probable that there is high chum production out of other areas? And I see that we had an uptick in chum, but we also had a huge uptick in sockeye. Overall, as a percentage of our harvest, our chum percentage was not out of the ordinary. It had more fish. It had not more indicative of being somewhere else.
Yeah, I guess what I should have said is that we would be operating in the blind, not knowing what those proportions are. But if the department was not to take action, given what we're projecting for the Yukon, for example, but for all of AYK and what we saw last year, it would be
the governor would come down, right? And it would be maybe an overreaction. So the reality is that if it looks like that chum harvest is going to be high again, there will be action taken. And we don't know if that action will actually make an effect on any lake.
Is there a way that we can guarantee that we have data coming in, even if the beast is being tied to the beast? Just so that we know it's tied to the beast because there's a lot of chum. We also want, in the next 4 years, to know whether the chums that we sit down for were chums of concern or not.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think we're going to be sampling if you're not harvesting.
So that leaves this kind of hole in the data.
It does. But what we'll also see, though, is Crystal Bay chum. And is that going to stay the same as it has the last 2 years? Is it going to come back up? I mean, we do have a few other pieces of the puzzle that we can try to tie in together. But frankly, this season, I mean, it's preliminary. And the wound is really fresh in AYK. And they are on, they're poised and ready to take whatever action they can. And so suffice it to say, we had this discussion at the Board of Fish. Harry M. Sainers stepped up and said that they would self-police and take their own actions to reduce the harvest for the last year. And we believe you guys. We're counting on you doing that. You and the process is working together. But if it looks like it's not working, then the commissioner has promised assurances at the Board of Fish and also in other places that he will take it. I just want everybody to be aware of that.
Is there a possibility that the department could have, you know, a boat with a sample, you know, if they do get shut down, but that they're in at least a boat with a sample in
there's not a plan for that now?
There's not a plan for that now, and that sample wouldn't represent fishery right. Anyway, because that's not how the fishery behaves.
It wouldn't work with the program plan that we have.
In one boat fishing in one place, I know it's an idea. It gives you some information, but it's not what happened last year, and it's not going to happen next year. It's not commercial fishery. We will be sampling setfill next year. We will be sampling driftfill next year, and I know that the gear types harvest different types of fish. But there will be samples coming in, and if there are closures, there will be openers on either side, and we will sample on either side of things and create a picture out of what the harvest is commercial fishery. Grab sample. Are tricky. Without a study design, it's tricky. And sometimes you get information that is not that useful. And that's why there's usually a lot of thought put into the design of a study, and it's not just go out and grab some fish.
And so, in that same vein, I guess, is there, separate from the existing study design as it stands, I mean, is there opportunity in the future to maybe look at some of these other ideas that have come up, such as, like, you know, daily sampling or, you know, working with the fleet, some sort of, like, cooperative research of ways to make maybe some supplementary data available that doesn't mess with the existing study design but could maybe support some of these other questions? Or, I mean, is that a possibility, something that could be looked at?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of push that over to Kevin, but I think we're going to go into this year and come out of a board meeting, and things are going to look probably a little different next year. But I think having a study plan ahead of the season and having an idea of what we're looking at, I mean, we're open to research. Now, Kevin, you want to add on that?
No, I think Lisa hit it pretty good there. But I guess the other thing to keep in mind is that this is, you know, we do have an intention of sampling for 5 years. And, you know, having holes in 1 year or another year, we may be able to, you know, to kind of estimate what that would look like based on what other years look like as well. If we see pulses of specific stocks moving through in a year where we get complete sampling and, you know, have a 100% full fishery, we might be able to make some estimates of what happened during holes in other years. So that's the other benefit of having a study plan that has, you know, 5 years planned to do this. Instances where there are, you know, restrictions in a particular season or the fishery isn't operating completely because of stock concerns or other things, that's the reality of the fishery, and what we're trying to do is describe the composition of this fishery. And if you're not fishing, you're not impacting other stocks. So I think Lisa already hit on a lot of that, but I think the big thing is that we have multiple years planned, and having 1 year with some holes in it isn't the end of the world.
May I'll just tag on briefly to that. Can you guys hear me okay?
There's a lot of feedback coming in. I don't know why, Nick.
Well, I'll try one more time. Oh, better. You know, all these are really great questions, and I wanted to sort of emphasize that there's actually been quite a bit of internal dialogue about a lot of the issues that people are bringing up. We thought about, well, what does it mean if we collect a sample on a test fish boat? We actually wondered what would we do if the fishery gets closed for particular reasons. So, I mean, I want you to be aware that we're thoughtfully thinking through these things. And the other thing that is similar to what Kevin has mentioned and Lisa is that, you know, even though it seemed like there was a fair amount of momentum to get this project going, it was and is a little bit of a scramble for us. We did not have an existing program with samplers out in all these ports. All these people had to be hired, figure out logistics of getting people out there. And there has been conversation about part of this year is getting this up and running, and then after this years of collection, sitting back and thinking about what we did and what we collected, and are there reasonable things that we could add in that we missed to make this study better. You do miss 1 year, and that is a consideration. But I guess to answer your question, Charlotte, I mean, part of our thought was at the end of the season, going through and thinking deliberately, are there things that we could add into this project that would make it better? Maybe one thing also to revisit that I heard about the release of information and data, I know I'm sort of jumping back in time here, so hopefully we don't miss momentum. There's a balance between, you know, capturing all the variability, the desire to get the information out to the public in a timely manner, the desire to answer questions for areas of the state that are really struggling, and really sort of process questions when the board meets. So even though our op plan does sort of spell out this multi-year before results come out, we realize there's a lot of interest in this data, and there is likelihood that reports and analysis will come out sooner than we are signaling in the operational plan. Thank you.
I have one comment.
You've got a comment here.
So let's say this goes on 4 or 5 years, and we stay shut down at the rate we are right now through the Board of Fish process or commissioner or whatever, and we don't do daily samples or every other day samples or something during the periods we're shut down, nobody knows why the AYK fish aren't there. So say something in the ocean changes back, and during this five-year period, the run rebuilt. But then there's no data down here to show, did we really have an effect on it? So if that takes place, is Area M going to suffer? Are we still going to be shut down because the AYK could say, look, they've been shut down for 5 years now during this time period, and our run came back. So I think it's a it's a pretty important question as to how we protect ourselves in this process also. So maybe something that needs to be looked at as you go down this road is maybe needs to look, take a strong look at doing some sampling here and farther out west and use it as part of cost recovery or something, but something there to protect Area M if the stocks recover. And we're all sitting on the beach, and everybody says, well, we don't know if it was the ocean or if it was you guys, so we're just going to shut down.
I think that's a really good point. But we will have data from this year and all years showing what is being harvested here. So we will have that. I don't envision these fisheries being closed completely. I mean, if that was going to happen, we would have done it now.
The reason I bring that up is if you remember in the past years when we went through all the different scenarios on how to let the fish pass through, that's why I thought about it. Like, we're kind of doing like windows.
Right.
Somebody could say, well, those windows work. Our run is bad. And we're going like, but we don't focus on the
fish. We would fish those windows last year, right?
No. We haven't had windows for quite a while.
There's days when no fishing occurs. There's days when no fishing occurs.
Yeah.
So we do have that. We had that last year, and we saw what we saw. I think what's important for people to keep in mind is that we're just ground truthing. Let me back up. There's a lot of accusation, as you're aware, being thrown at this fishery as the cause. And so we're going to ground truth that. And either confirm it or take the wind out of that sail. That's the end result of this. But until we get that information, if they have another year where no subsistence can occur because those runs are so weak, there's going to be some action taken here if it looks like a lot of chum are being harvested, because we do know that some chum for those areas are harvested here. And the sentiment coming from those users, and I heard to my face that you were there at the panel meeting, we didn't get to fish at all. If they caught one fish found through our river, that's too many. So that's the sentiment that we're getting through the governor's office, through the department. So, and you heard it at Four Fish last year.
I heard it earlier. That's the, you know, I mean, it's always an area. That's why we're encouraging, like, sample the whole month.
Yeah.
Let's end it. Let's figure out when that ultra fish goes through and, you know, do what we have to do.
That's a different study design. Yeah.
This little bit here, a little bit there, it's just going to prolong. I mean, Watson was signed by how many groups? And the only group that liked the results, area, the only group, every other group thought the results were it was a good time, and $6 million, and how many years of your life, Bill? You know? I mean, if we have to improve on Watson, this doesn't sound like improvement. It sounds like a reactionary. If we have to improve on WASAP, let's improve on WASAP. That's kind of our, you know. And I don't think anybody in this room would say we don't catch any AY. We want to know when, where, and how. And we would love to know that. We're just like they, you know, and that, it's just a little frustrating when you get reactionary stuff. We have to live with the consequences.
But then, a question back for you. Do you think that pulse of fish is consistent from year to year?
They follow the script.
Okay. But you can still, if you have a live land, you get, I mean, just like, anybody when the peak of the stuff, they're not supposed to do a shooting again. I mean, we have an answer. It's not true. But over time, we get an answer. I know this is a weird time for. But it's just getting more and more frustrating, always having finger points. And then, you know, I mean, I think everybody's pretty happy with the curve that's going to be studied, because I think the Asian hatchery component is going to go through the roof, like it has to vary all the time. And the study's kind of, you know, from our perspective,
scientist. I'm not a scientist, but every time I do a lot of scientific work for medicine, especially baseline, baseline, baseline. If the baseline is flawed, you would want to continue on that way. And we're not.
You mentioned last year. You don't have any of the rates going down. And you made a statement about your time there in the community that they never had any on the river like that. It did with different species.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was being specific to the summer chum primarily, but also Chinook king. But we didn't open on any of those four species in the Yukon, for example, the entire year.
There was time up there to have a demonstration fishery. They went fishing whether you wanted them to or not. And not a bloody person got arrested.
They were allowed to fish for other species with 4-inch mesh, so to avoid. But they caught king. They caught. There's a lot of things. They caught sheepfish. They catch a lot of things like that. So when I say didn't get to fish, I was just talking about the chum and the Chinook primarily.
Have you been any?
Yeah. It's not targeted.
It's not targeted at all. No, there's a lot of fisheries.
It's a pretty, the 4-inch mesh on the Yukon is for non-salmon species, and then if you do catch anything, it's going to help. But also on the Yukon, I mean, the pinks don't go very far up the river, so you're talking a large portion of the rest of the river that doesn't have opportunities for other species.
That's going to be a lot of sacrifice.
I mean, I think it's the same argument for both sides. It's frustrating, you know, this frustration as a matter of fact, I think for both sides, you know, this is what we got. This was kind of hopefully you guys get additional funding for it.
Hello, this is Tom in Falstaff. May I speak?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
There's a report that just came out from NOAA showing huge PSEs of chum salmon by the pollock fleet in the Bering Sea. Not only chums, but Chinook salmon also. And I'm just asking the department if it's possible to maybe focus on the Bering Sea bycatch issue also.
This is Bill. The department is obviously paying attention to what's going on in the bycatch. We participate in with our NOAA colleagues on interpretation of what they're doing, what they're sampling, but it's a federal responsibility in that fishery to sample, and then the samples are done by the NOAA Fisheries Lab. So attention is being paid to what's happening there. We're also working with NOAA scientists on figuring out what the effective return would be from the fish that have been caught. In other words, it's called it's basically adjusting for their age. These fish are immature that are being caught as bycatch. The chum salmon are 3, 4, and 5 years old. Not all of those would be returning the year that they're caught. So say that there's a 3-year-old that would eventually return as a 5-year-old that it got caught. That there's no guarantee that it would have actually survived long enough to return at 5 because of just natural mortality in the ocean. So we have to discount, basically, the fish and the bycatch, try to figure out what that would mean for actual return, how many fish actually would have returned out of that. That's obviously a certain amount of guesswork using the best science that we have available, which is why we're participating, because Alaska, it matters to Alaskans. And so we want to make sure that the best information is used and the best analyses are used to do that piece.
Okay, yeah, but this article, this came out about 15 minutes ago, and there's some numbers in there that can be extrapolated, probably. Thank you.
And I think this is also being taken up to the council this week for anybody who's interested in looking at some of those reports and that analysis that Bill was just talking about.
Can't comment on it. I haven't read it.
Yeah, but it's coming up at all three. I mean, I don't think it's come up at the AP yet, but it will definitely be up in the next day or two and then at the council.
All right, do we have any more questions? Everybody's pretty quiet.
Finish with questions.
Hi, Lisa, this is Marit. I don't have a question, but I just really appreciate the discussion that's been had this morning, and a lot of really good questions. A lot of solution-based questions, and I just wanted to say that I am following. It's really interesting. I expect a lot of this is going to be built upon at the next board meeting, and I just appreciate the discussion today. Thank you.
And I would just echo those sentiments. I think I can probably speak for most people here. We really appreciate all of the work that the department has done and your guys' commitment to science and really finding solutions. I think we all appreciate it, and I think it's in everyone's best interest. So we're so glad to have you here. So thank you for coming all the way out and meeting with us. So thank you.
Yeah, these are good discussions, and I know that it's not the end of the discussion. Hopefully we get good samples this season, and then, yeah, depending on the budget and the funding, we can always talk about what we can do differently next year. I don't know if you guys have any more comments on anything, or that's a no.
I do want you to know that we'll be looking into how to make sure we get as much information as we can, the resources we have available. That will include taking a look at this debate as an alternate work as it's possible,
yeah.
And time allows, so.
One last thing. So if there is a high return of dogs to the bay, do you guys have a plan to keep them down?
Well, I mean, it's a statement goal bait, and we're going to manage for a statement goal. We're going to see what their harvest is as well in season as best we can. But like you said, they have a normal harvest rate, not rate, normal harvest number of around 1.5 million a season. And the last two seasons, it's been 200,000. So to me, that's going to be really important to watch. If that number comes back up or if it stays down, regardless of any other action. I think it's important. I mean, this is something I've been playing with in my head. There are two different some harvests here the last 2 years. 2 years ago, it was fairly normal. And last year was about double.
No chums is ideal, but it was four, and then it shot through the roof, and that's kind of like the, I mean, maybe a little bit more effort, not that much, but the summer went.
Well, my point for bringing that up was if you compare that with the Bristol Bay harvest in the same 2 years, both about 200,000. There's no difference based
based on what was harvested here, really. So that's interesting to me, and I want to keep an eye on things like that. They trend with the other chum on the AYK. I don't know if I can answer that. I don't know the answer yet. I know it's harder to apportion them in the count.
Okay.
No. So sockeye, especially the Bristol Bay stocks, are lake rearing, and so they feed on freshwater plankton in the lake before they head out to the ocean. Some come out of the gravel and go straight to the ocean. It's kind of a different life history. But what we are seeing in Bristol Bay sockeye is they used to be predominantly two checks or two winters or two summers in the lake before they go out. Now they're leaning and trending towards more predominantly one check. They're going out sooner, and that. We suspect that's related to warmer water in the fresh water. They're rolling faster and getting out quicker.
So there's no competition between sockeye smolt and chum fry in the marine.
There is a little bit of food overlap, but not huge. All salmon are opportunistic feeders, but they have preferences.
Yeah.
And they don't overlap significantly, I don't think. I'm not the right person to answer that. That's a Katie Howard question.
Just really quick, so on that note, just, are you guys sort of working or have worked with Jim Murphy? And because I had heard he had some maybe an interesting paper coming out about later in life, marine mortality as being kind of a critical period for the Yukon chum. So I just wasn't sure.
That's going to talk. That'll have Katie Howard and Sabrina Garcia will be authors on that paper. And that's partly that marine heat wave idea that there is mortality that occurs, especially we're seeing the signal in chum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what happens normally.
Right.
It's what it seems to be related to these warmer temperatures in the ocean. And yes, there is overlap between sockeye, chum, and pink salmon. There's some overlap, but the greatest distinction in diet between those three are the chum and the sockeye. The pinks overlap. All of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going up.
opportunity for you to listen to what Katie can tell you, and you could ask questions, and she, I'd be more than happy to bring her some place.
Very interesting. We're the only region in the state with positive chum production.
All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up. There's paperwork here if you guys want maps or management strategies, or we have calendars down at the office.